The following audio is from Park Church in Denver, Colorado. More information about Park Church is available online at parkchurchdenver.org.
Cool. Yeah, so we're going to talk about how to play in bands well, because I think it's an undervalued skill. Most people don't even realize that it's a separate skill, that there's a difference between playing an instrument and playing in a band. But like I said, there's a huge difference, and it really matters because every Sunday we're trying to do a lot more than play. We're trying to do a lot more than play good music, but we are not trying to do less than play good music. So we really want to do that. So the first thing I like to talk about when we talk about playing in bands is this idea of sonic space, because it's really important to understand this idea of sonic space. When I teach stuff, I tend to ask non-rhetorical questions. So if I ask a question, please answer. I was trained by Apple how to teach old people how to use computers, and I've never been able to break the habit. So if I ask a question, it's non-rhetorical. So what are we talking about when we talk about sonic space?
Is that a band like
the Sonic Flood.
Sonic Flood.
Can we talk about
Sonic
Flood?
No.
Only in the secrets.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Sonic.
Tim and I were once at karaoke, and Sonic Flood's In the Secret was an option in the book, and I was so close to just uncomfortably...
That many beers into the night. I was
close enough to just ruining the night for everyone in that establishment. But so what is Sonic Space? What are we talking about? Totally, yeah. We think a lot about, like, space, right? Where things occupy, physics, you know, that kind of stuff, science. So when we talk about sonic space, really what we're talking about is what people can hear and where all the noise-making apparatus is that we all use sort of fall in that place, because it makes a huge difference. Obviously, we can hear pretty much things in three ranges, right? We can hear low-end things. We can hear high-end things, and then in the middle we hear mids. So if we've got this line, and this represents basically what our speakers can produce and what people can hear on a Sunday morning. So what's an instrument that's down here in the low end?
Bass.
That's a very low one. Yeah. Whereas in the high end, we've got
Baby screaming.
We've got things like violins, kind of fall in this mid to high range. Whoa. Viliones. Violins. Violin is kind of in this mid-high space. There's a couple of interesting ones. There's keys and piano, which... Yeah, piano goes like this. The other one is drums. Drums go all the way from here in your kick drum to your toms and stuff, and then your cymbals are way up here at the total high end, right? So already, if we're just thinking about what the speakers can produce and what people are hearing, well, with just a drum kit going, we've already covered the sonic spectrum, right? Now, why does this matter? Why do we care about sonic space? Well, I like to... Sorry, that was a rhetorical question. So I like to use the parking lot metaphor or analogy. So we've got a parking lot. And a parking lot has spaces. Right? And cars go in these spaces. These are
just boxes. Let's go boxes.
Cars. Cars go in spaces, and so let's say these are high-end spaces, and these are low-end, and these are mid. Now, let's take two instruments like, let's say your piano player and your electric guitar player are both trying to play, because electric guitar typically sits in this high-mid range as well. We'll go El Guitar, Spanish for the guitar, is kind of in this range here, your mids to highs. Now, what happens if, let's say, on the song Cannons by Phil Wickham, it has that intro, da na 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 na, What if your keyboardist and your electric guitarist are both playing that exact same part? Well, suddenly they're both trying to jam into the same spot, right? And we get a sonic collision. And what happens is instead of people going, oh, piano and guitar, they go, oh, something's kind of going, but it's just, it's not clear, it's not precise, because you suddenly got two instruments fighting for the same space. So that matters a lot. Yeah.
I have a question with that.
Yeah.
Doesn't that tend to happen more when you're trying to do similar things in the same range? Because, like, I mean, a lot of times you will double melodies on different instruments.
Totally. And that's something we'll definitely talk to about, how do we fit all this together?
Yeah.
Because there are exceptions to every rule. But it's really important to be thinking about this idea of sonic space. So I really want to, real quick, and I'm sorry, this is just going to go fast because that's just how it's going tonight. But typically, so your drums cover the whole spectrum. That's a given. Generally, your bass covers your low end. Where's the tip of this marker? Bass. There it is. You've got cymbals all the way up here, right? They take up the high end. Really interesting, acoustic guitar actually occupies the same range of frequencies as hi-hats, because really what gets picked up most is the shika-shika of the pick on the strings. So in a situation where it's just acoustic and a couple other instruments, that's great. Acoustic is all over the place. But you actually get a bit of what can be a conflict with the acoustic and hi-hats. So we've actually got acoustic guitar is generally in the higher range as far as what's going to be heard. Especially if you do things like capo up, strum real hard. Your electric guitar is pretty much occupying your mid to high. And then piano is kind of a wild card. Now, the reason it's important to talk about that is because it's okay for an instrument to be a wild card. It's fine that some of these instruments occupy the same sonic space from time to time. We just have to plan for it. And it has to be on purpose. One thing that can be super difficult when dealing with electric guitars, just for example, is what a lot of electric guitarists like to do is on the verse, they play a really high up part, and then on the choruses, they drop down here and just play low power chords. And the piano player is listening and going, what the heck, dude, So on the verses, I'm listening to you, and I'm playing lower chords. But then on the chorus, you flip, and I have to quickly flip and go up and play up high. It's difficult. So understanding that idea of sonic space and where you fit really helps build communication in a band, which is ultimately the goal of tonight, is for any band on Sunday or any band in the church just to be able to communicate well. I think a lot of times what happens is it's easy to get this feeling of, oh, I don't play piano. So I can't really tell the piano player what to do because he's like a wizard on the keys and I don't understand what he's doing. And I just play acoustic. I don't really play electric. So he's like doing black magic with his pedals. It's not really my place to tell him what to do. When really, on a Sunday morning, any bass player should be able to tell any drummer, any electric guitar player, hey, have you thought about doing this? Or what you're playing is kind of clashing with the keys. What if you guys did X? All the way across the board, whether you don't play a single instrument and you just sing, you play everything, we want a sense of collaboration, and we don't want anybody to feel like, well, I can't talk to that instrumentalist because I don't know enough about that instrument. And we certainly don't want any instrumentalist to think, nobody can tell me what to do because I'm a wizard. And I say that because I was that guy. I was the electric guitar player who would just blow you off, you can't tell me what to play, I'm a wizard, you don't understand what I'm doing. And people are like, no, actually what you're playing sounds like crap because you're clashing with all of the other instruments out there. Does that make sense? Does anybody have questions about sort of the concept of sonic space? Does the parking lot make sense? These are all non-rhetorical questions. Okay, so let's move on and let's dig a little bit into individual instruments and their roles so we know what they're supposed to be doing. And JD might look at me cross-eyed if I get any of these wrong. He laughs, but it's true. All right. So when we talk about a band, what instruments are we generally talking about? Guitar. What kinds of guitars?
Electric and acoustic.
Electric and acoustic. We got L and AC. We've got bass. We've got drums. We've got vocalists, we've got piano and keyboard, and we separate those out, and we've got vocals, and then we always have cool stuff like, we'll say strings, and etc. That's typically what we're talking about. When we talk about a band context, let's be real, we're talking about Western music, pretty much post-1930 stylings. Like, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about modern, white, Western music. Because that's what we do. We don't play, I don't know any Eastern scales. I'd like to. So when we talk about a band, we're typically talking about some collection of these instruments. And that might vary from time to time. But let's just kind of break down what each instrument should do. And I'm going to hopefully give some kind of, I don't know. So really, I like to think of all the instruments in any given band. We've got another fun spectrum. We've got, it's more of a continuum. We've got rhythm. Is that right?
R-H-Y.
What a dumb word.
Then the Y, T-H-M.
So we've got rhythm instruments. Let's say we've got rhythmic, an even dumber word. We've got chordal instruments. And sometimes Y. And we've got melodic, right? And for the moment, I'm not talking about vocals, really. I hope it's understood that when you're playing in a band, the vocals are the most important part. Everything you do as an instrumentalist is to support what the vocalists are doing. So when the vocals are singing a song about the depth of our depravity and our need for a savior, you're hopefully not playing a really peppy up-tempo. You are making sure that what they're singing has weight and carries. And we'll get a lot into that, but if I don't hit on vocals a lot, it's because I'm assuming, and our assumption should be, every time I play an instrument, my role is to support the vocals. I learned that lesson from Zach Lind from Jimmy Eat World. That's what he talks about all the time. He's a drummer, and when people ask, what's your approach to drums? And he says, I support the vocals. It's like, that's all I do, is I make sure that whatever Jim is singing about, you feel what he's singing about. I don't care about anything else. I'm like, that's a pretty good way to look at it. So we've got this continuum here, rhythmic, chordal, melodic. So what's an easy one? What's a rhythmic instrument?
Drums.
So drums are pretty much exclusively rhythmic, right? There exist countries where they do chordal things with drums, but really we're talking about drums are purely rhythmic. Now, you've got some interesting ones like piano. Which piano can really handle any of these? Piano can be rhythmic, piano can be chordal, and piano can be melodic. Does everybody get what I mean when I say rhythmic, chordal, melodic? Somebody define chordal for us.
Has chords,
plays chords. That's what you do. You play chords. You play groups of notes at a time. The other end is melodic, where you're playing lots of single note melodies. And then rhythmic. You're not producing necessarily notes. You're producing rhythms, sounds. So where does bass fit in this spectrum?
Rhythmic, yeah.
Yeah. This, you would not believe what a point of contention this is with some bass players. But bass is a rhythmic instrument. Guitar?
Yes.
Ooh, right. Which one is a good question? Because your L guitar... really fits either of these. He can go either way. And again, that depends on context. Is the keyboard player... Does this song have piano playing just chords, keeping rhythm with those chords? Great. Then electric guitar goes melodic. If the piano's playing a really nice melody, I'm probably just going to chunk some chords. What about acoustic guitar?
Chordal and rhythmic.
Yes. This one gets a lot of people. I'm just going to say it. Feel free to disagree with me. Feel free to be wrong. The acoustic guitar, when you're in a band setting on Sunday mornings, now this may be different in a different band. If you're in a bluegrass band, it's very different. Generally, you're not a melodic instrument. You're not playing lead solos. This is very different if you're in a band that does that. But what we're generally talking about, acoustic guitar is actually pretty much a chordal and rhythmic instrument. In fact, when you... Really good acoustic players in bands are almost, I don't want to say exclusively, but they are extremely dialed in with what the cymbals and hi-hats are doing. So if the drummer is playing on the hi-hats, you'll hear a good acoustic player going locked in with that rhythm, especially because what's going to come through in the mix the most on an acoustic guitar when the full band is going is the sound of the pick scraping across the strings. And that's awesome. It's this amazing rhythmic sound that has these nice chordal undertones. But I prefer to think of acoustic guitar in a band situation as a rhythmic instrument first and a chordal instrument second. Especially when, if you're leading from the acoustic guitar and you're the one starting a song. Well, it's really important that you are on rhythmically. Obviously, you need to be making the right chord changes, but that's sort of a given versus playing on time, playing a good rhythm, playing in the right signature, all that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Yes.
I'd also say, too, the way that most of the audio guys and gals mix your acoustic guitar is going to be on the rhythmic side of things because the band is usually pretty full. So when I mix an acoustic guitar, all I want to really hear is the jigga-jigga of the strings.
Right.
So that's just, again, generally.
Yeah. So. And context is everything. Obviously, on a song... the verses of God, I Look to You. You've pretty much got light keyboards, electric guitar is maybe doing some drone-y type stuff. The drum is just really gently. You're going to hear a lot more of the acoustic guitar chords, and that's great for that context. Then when we get to I Will Love You, the acoustic is going to fade back a lot more, and other instruments are going to come into place. All this stuff is so important because what happens a lot is everybody tries to get in the same space, especially because people tend to notice what's up on the high end in our sonic spectrum and what's people tend to notice the melodic stuff. So an immature band member rushes to try to fill those high end melodic spaces because that's what people hear and that's what's kind of cool. The number one thing about being a good band player is that you abandon your autonomous individuality America, and you focus on parts of a whole and what's good for the entire thing that we're doing. A little analogy that I meant to share earlier that I just like for sonic space is if we had a blank canvas. So let's say this is a song. So on Sunday we are going to play a song, and we have all of these instruments, and each instrument, let's say the song is a blank canvas, a white empty canvas, and each instrument is a color. Let's say the drums are blue. It's going to be a landscape. So let's say the drums are blue. Obviously, this song's going to have a lot of blue probably, right? Because the drums take up a lot of space. What a lot of musicians try to do, though, is go, I'm a drummer. I'm making the whole thing blue. Like, you are going to hear nothing but drums for this song. Well, all we have is sky, and that is a terrible landscape. Or the piano goes, well, I'm your browns and greens down here. You're going to hear nothing but me. I am going to cover the full spectrum of human like perception, and we've got just a dirt painting. Rather than what we want to see is a drummer come in and go, okay, here's where I fit. Here's what's going to be clear, and here's really, again, here's what's going to help the vocals say about God what they're trying to say about God. That's spicy meatball. What do they say about God? Anyway, so that's just a little analogy, a little nugget. Keep that one. Save it for any day. It's a free one. Okay, so we've got our little... Everybody kind of understanding where the instruments go. Why is it good to know this stuff?
Know your place.
I love it. I love that I don't have to be bad cop. Yeah, it's important that people know their place. When a bass player tries to shoot up to the melodic end of the spectrum, what happens? We have a huge rhythmic deficiency, and you've got a drummer who's trying to carry all of the rhythm on his own, and that's a little tough. Yeah. Don't get me started. So, cool. Is this all making sense? Is this gelling? What time is it? Sweet. Cool. So real quick, let's just go through each instrument, and we're just going to kind of, what I'm going to try to give you is just some helpful how to tell that instrument to know their place, but also how to communicate with, so we don't have that, he's a sorcerer, I can't approach him, rather, he's just a dude in my band, and I can talk to all the dudes in my band. What's that?
Did you watch Harry Potter recently? You're like old wizards and sorcerer puffs and
everything. Does anybody know, what's the muting spell?
It's called a swift smack to the mouth.
Oh. Okay. All right, so let's talk about an important one. Let's talk about drums. So we know that the drums are
the best.
We know that they're rhythmic, right? Now, when we talk about drums, we are talking about a drum kit because we're talking again about Western popular influence music. So we are talking about what are the elements of a drum kit, real quick?
Bass, snare, cymbals,
kay.
Toms.
We got bass or kick drum.
Oh, tambourines.
20-inch hi-hat.
Toms. Snare. And cymbals. And again, we know that this, cymbals, this covers that whole sonic spectrum right there. So right away, your drummer is 90% of your band. I think we're all familiar with, I took a class once and they were like, this is a kick drum, this is a tom, how do you know if it's a four piece? And we had to like, one, two, it was super condescending. We all know what a drum kit looks like, what the parts of it are. So let's talk about just a few different things. So we know the role of a drummer. Teach Sean how to spell rhythm. That's the role of a drummer. So the drum is a rhythmic instrument, right? So what are the most important things for a drummer to do?
Play the kick on time.
Same time.
Play on time.
Tempo.
Wow. Yeah. So keep time. Decent looking. Well, his job is to keep time. What else does the drummer do?
Dance with the bass.
No. Yeah, I like that.
Dance with the bass.
Okay.
Set the time signature.
Keep time. Ooh. Set time signature. What's a time signature?
How many beats in a measure?
What's a measure?
It's like a musical sentence.
Yeah.
BPM beats per minute.
Yeah, that's kind of with keeping time.
4/4.
Yeah, so these are, if you're a drummer, these are 99% of your job. I'll take a me who's halfway decent on drums, but I'm pretty okay on tempo. I'll take that guy over a super technically proficient guy who varies wildly. A song starts slow and ends up fast, or starts fast and ends up slow. We don't need that. Okay, any other number one things for the drummer? We have a lot of time.
Dynamics.
What do we mean by dynamics?
Matching sound, not overpowering.
Mm.
Kind of, the drums sort of guide it. They build the song. So when you want to
build the song, they guide the song. So we're guiding.
Intensity and volume.
Building. Yeah, control intensity and volume. Why is that so important?
Because the rest of the band's going to follow that.
Has anybody seen Ocean's inappropriate drum solo? Has everybody seen this? Okay.
Define it inappropriate.
So, the Hillsong Oceans. I will walk upon the waves. Quiet, reflective, pensive, a bit meandering. But there's this great video of when this quiet, reflective, the worship leader's leading from the keyboard. It's very nice. Maybe later. And then what happens? Drum solo. Out of nowhere. Drum solo. And I don't mean like a building, just huge, full-ass, terrible drum solo. On V drums. Right? There's no dynamic. Yeah. And what's that guy doing? He's doing what we talked about earlier. I'm gonna paint this whole thing blue. You will remember my drumming, whether you want to or not. So yeah, dynamics. This is, if I had to say what the most important things for a drummer, it is keep time, and this one right here, control the intensity and volume. As the drummer, it is your job to keep time and control the intensity and volume. It's not the worship leader's, despite what the worship leader might think. A lot of worship leaders think it's their job to keep time and control the dynamics. A little bit. They offer suggestions. I used to go to a church and the worship leader would visibly fight with drummers because he and the drummer would have a staunch disagreement about what tempo. And the drummer was always right. The drummer started, no, we practiced the song at 90 and I started at 90. And DJ would be playing, hey everybody, let's worship the Lord. And he would glare back at the drummer and go like this to tell him to pick up the pace. And that's just not the job of the worship leader. That is the drummer's job. So if you play drums, don't let anybody tell you different. Your job is to control the intensity volume and to keep time on that song. So, yeah.
Well, and like practice is a good space to figure that out. So this,
right.
The worship leader may totally have a tempo in mind for the song.
Right.
But like, in regards to keeping the rest of the band there.
Exactly.
But also, I feel like direction of song can sometimes vary, especially near the end of the song.
Totally.
Take it another
yeah.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is on the worship leader, but the worship leader can suggest all day long that, hey, let's bring this song down, or let's actually build the intensity back up. The drummer is the one who's going to actually take the reins. If anything, the worship leader is the captain, but the drummer is...
the driver.
Well, I was thinking like Star Trek, like the drummer is the guy actually like, yes, captain, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop, and like... making it... The drummer is the one making it so. Cool? All right. Everybody feel good telling a drummer what they should do? Everybody feel good bossing a drummer around? Okay. All right. If this is the most important thing for a drummer then what might be a super important thing for drummers to have?
Metronome.
You ready to write something in your books? We're going to keep this on the board all night. Ready? Dr. Dog. Nope. No metronome?
No problem.
Nope.
No, sir.
Sit like a show guitar.
No metronome, go home.
There you go. No metronome, go home. For guitarists, it is this.
Tuner dead.
That's all you need to know for those guys. All right, drums is good. Let's move on.
Just once, right?
But it has locking tuners, bro. Dude, I tuned it like last Sunday. All right, let's bring it in. Let's talk about bass. Nobody say the Meghan Trainor song. Bass is, I'm going to say this, again, feel free to be wrong, bass is the most important instrument in a band. You cannot have a band, and by band I mean drums plus other instruments, you can't have it without bass. If you have a drummer and no bass player, send the drummer home or get him on the piano. There's no point because I forget the guy's name. I once heard a great jazz musician put it this way. The drums may be the foundation of the house, but the bass is the floor. You can have all the foundation you want, but without the bass, there's nothing for people to walk on. There's no feel. The drummer controls the intensity and the dynamics. He sets the time, but the bass provides the feel. He provides the... the groove, there's something intangible about what the bass provides, and yet you know when it's not there. So the bass is rhythmic, R for rhythmic. He's low to low mid in our sonic space to low mid, very low mid. He should generally stay there with a few exceptions. So what is the bass's job? What does the bass do?
Support.
Ooh. Ooh, support the melody. He supports. Right, because what's true about bass that's not true of any other instrument, every other instrument can abandon chords and just play beautiful melodic or ambient sounds as long as you have your bass player making the chord changes. He makes all that possible. Without him, there's no chords. There's no context. These melodies make zero sense because we don't know what chords they're being played over. So he supports the melody.
Does
So what should he do to do this? Give me some, what should a bass player do to do all this?
Play the right notes.
Oh, play the right notes. That's a really good one. Stick to roots. Yeah.
Sorry, not always bass players.
Generally, yeah.
Totally. That's actually.
We're talking in a worship band context.
So we're talking in worship band context, yeah.
Makes more sense.
Yeah. With the exception of, a lot of times you'll see those chords on a sheet that have weird slashes, and the electric guitar players are like, what? How can a chord be also an other chord? But there's a huge difference when you see A over C sharp. I almost added a second sharp. A lot of times you want the bass to just hit that root, that A. But sometimes it's really cool when the bass is the only one paying attention to those slashes. Because those slashes always fit. It's an alternate bass note. So yeah, stick to roots except for the slashes. Slashies. Play them scratchy lotteries. What else does the bass need to do?
Follow that kick drum.
Oh, follow that kick drum. What do we mean by follow that kick drum?
Play the same rhythm.
Don't clash.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Play the same.
Play the upbeats on the upbeats and the downbeats on the downbeats.
Yeah. If you want to hear the best example of this in music, listen to all of AC/DC's Back in Black album. Woo! Because every single song, you have a drummer going, and that's it. That is all he ever does. And you have a bass player who is either playing whole notes, doon, doon, or doon, 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 doon. And it's perfect. It's flawless execution of that rhythm unit. Really, when you talk about bass, you have to talk about drums. And vice versa. They are wedded to one another. It's a little different if we're talking about like an upright bass with, let's say we have an acoustic guitar, some strings, and an upright bass. That's a whole different instrument. The bass is really the most important instrument in that case, because he doesn't even have drums to make up half. But that right there is your rhythm section. So any other thoughts on bass?
I don't know if you really fit it in there, but the bass, I think, has to be really locked in.
Yeah.
You have to lock in with a lot of different components in the band. You have to lock in with the kick drum, to lock in with the keys or the piano that's playing. Yeah. You want to lock in with what the electric guitar is going to play, yeah, like in a melody kind of thing. You have to really pay attention to a lot of things that are going on. So
totally.
The bass has to be.
Yeah, and the bass, second to the drummer, is so capable of turning the dynamics of a song around. A bassist who maybe on a first verse is just playing big ringing whole notes. The song is very airy, it's very doom, it's just kind of there and floating. And then on the second verse, when he's suddenly playing like a groove or playing eight notes or something, well, suddenly we have picked up an intensity and you don't even realize it's there. All you know in the back of your head is we went from having this like light heartbeat to all of a sudden we've got this. And there's something there that you feel, and it changes the dynamic. So what do we know about bass? What kind of instrument is the bass? How important is it?
The
most. It's the most important instrument.
It's all about the bass.
That's one. Any questions about bass?
I was thinking of also knowing when not to play.
Ooh, that's a good one. Because there is something about sometimes the bass drops out. And what happens? You lose. I erased the spectrum. Let's get a mini spectrum. Low. Middle, high. You know it when suddenly the bass just drops out. And maybe we have a big bridge and then we do a chorus with no bass, just guitar and vocals. And then that bass comes back in and suddenly just the whole thing just lifts. Because it's like the air rushes back in. So yeah, when not to play, lock in with the kick drum. And that can sometimes literally mean locking in exactly with what the kick drum is playing. Some of the best bass stuff you'll hear is when a drummer is doing like doom to cat doom doom cat. The bass is going doom to doom 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 doom, like locked in exactly. One thing I like to think about is when to play staccato versus, somebody help me with staccato. It's what? It's been a long time since I had to write this. Yeah, staccato versus sustained notes. So some. Yeah. Sometimes staccato, dum, 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 they're just plucked. The notes don't ring out at all versus, hey, let those notes ring a little bit. Let it breathe a little bit. Because the plunky staccato sound, the kind of Beatles sound, boom, 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 yeah, can be great sometimes. And so that's some things to think about. Any other questions, thoughts on bass? Because we're all about it.
That's pretty close. That's pretty close.
Borderline. I'll allow it. Any other questions? Cool. Do you feel like you can boss a bass player around now?
Yes.
Cool. Do you feel like if, with minimal experience on the bass, you had to step in, you would know a little bit more about what to do?
Yes.
Awesome.
JP, would you put a bass player around
stepping in? Trick question. A guitar player says to you, well, I play guitar, I can play bass. What do you say?
No!
Wrong.
Go home. They play with picks all the time.
Ooh, when should you play a bass with a pick?
Never.
No.
Never.
No. All right, we'll do some examples. Okay, what have we covered? We talked about bass and drums. We've got a lot to go over. Acoustic guitar. Everybody understand acoustic guitar? Give me three problems that acoustic guitarists have.
Everyone can play it.
Everyone can play it. Everybody
probably has one.
Burn. Everybody bought one once. any common issues you see with acoustic guitar? Any ideas? Anybody?
So
I'm not going to write them down, but that's an acoustic guitar no-no. Like, just stick to your parts. Your chordal, rhythmic instrument. Stick to that. Don't try to solo. It's not going to work out for you in this context. My friends, the parlor pickers, they have two acoustics and an upright bass. Lots of acoustic guitar solos. It's awesome, but that's bluegrass. Very different. Okay, let's talk about electric guitar, because this is the one that frustrates a lot of people. Because, unfortunately, some people perceive the electric guitarist to be a mad scientist, and some... let's say by some I mean like 85-90% of electric guitarists think they are a brilliant mad scientist. Don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing. So I'm going to give you the kryptonite, the secret to bossing an electric guitar player around. Ready? I would draw this on your papers.
Unplug their pedals.
That is a good one.
Yeah. Magic's gone.
Yeah. How do you get a guitar player to stop playing? Put sheet music in front of them. Yep. Okay. Yeah. We could do a lot of those. Okay, so does everybody have two lines intersecting? What kind of lines are those?
Straight.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to create two, what do we call it? What do we call this? Continuums? Two axes. Thank you. So we've got... over down here, we've got single note. Right, single note. Over here, we've got chordal. And down here, we've got rhythmic.
Our H line.
It's also still on the board.
Nope, that's not quite an... there we go. That's an H and an M. And then we've got melodic. So everything an electric guitar player plays is going to fall somewhere in this spectrum between... single note, chordal, rhythmic, melodic. So, what's a song we play that has an electric guitar? What's the Man of Sorrows? Right? Where's that? What is that?
Melodic,
single note. That's like as up here as you can be. What do we mean by single note? Anybody?
Not playing two notes at the same time.
Pretty much. You're playing a single notes at a time. Versus... so at one end of the spectrum, you've got a guitar solo. Bruce had one on Sunday, and it made me so happy. We've got a guitar solo is as single note melodic as you get, right? That's it. Down here, you've got power chords. That is as chordal and melodic as you get. So using this chart, if you will, this is the best way that I have found to communicate with electric guitar players. Because what happens a lot of time is somebody says to an electric guitar player, I don't know, play something U2-ish. play something like Coldplay. And an electric guitar player is like, I don't know what that, like, do you mean like play acoustic chords like that one Coldplay song? Or do you mean like, yeah, do you mean play Lemon and just make super weird like noises that aren't even musical? So, which if somebody says play something U2-ish, what do they typically mean?
Bad.
Shut up. Where are they thinking? Up in here? They're thinking single note melodic. They're thinking something up here. So, yeah. That is, he's a, the edge. He's a real, he's a special case. So single note melodic, we're thinking about things like a lot of intros. You're going to say, hey, for the intro, could you play something kind of more single note melodic? Maybe you just mirror the melody of the song, you know? Versus, hey, on the intro, maybe the piano is gonna play a melody, so why don't you just kind of drop down into more of the rhythmic section? Can anybody think of when it would be single note rhythmic?
That's probably when like dotted eighth notes.
Yeah. Yeah, has anybody heard when an electric player is playing something, it's like, it's like, it's a high note, but it's delayed and it's rapid. That's like single note rhythmic stuff. Or maybe you're thinking of, I can't remember songs when I need to. I have to have them in front of me. Anyway, yeah, so anybody have any like examples for kind of some of these quadrants? That's the word I was looking for. The quadrants, because there's quad of them.
Well, I feel like slide would be more chordal. Slide.
Yeah. Yeah. Slide is like more up here, right?
Yeah.
Slide, because you are definitely playing like the chords. You're playing the notes of a chord. You just don't hit them all at once necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other ideas? Does this make sense to everybody? Okay. So let's talk about your other two big problems is pedals. Sorry, this board's a mess. Imagine if I ever became a real teacher. Pedals, right? We're talking about two pedals when we talk about pedals. We are talking about an overdrive or distortion pedal, right? What does an overdrive pedal do?
Fuzz.
Yeah, makes it all distorted and fuzzy and loud, right? We could debate what, you know, but we're talking about overdrive and we're talking about delay pedals, right? What do delay pedals do?
Delay.
They delay. They make a note or a sound from the guitar repeat itself at a certain delay. And really, this is where it gets tricky talking to electric guitar players because everybody's a little different in their approach, and especially some guys have a very dry approach. Like I play chords and I kind of do some country style picking through those chords, but I don't really do the whole pedal thing. Some people just love pedals and just obsess with them, and so I want to use as many pedals as possible. No, never. I would say that anybody that's like, hey, I have no idea how to tell an electric guitar player to use more or less or what pedals, find JD, myself, or Bruce probably. And we'd be happy to just like kind of show you. We don't have like somebody hooked up. I don't know why I pointed that out. Like, you all thought that there was a guitar player here that, if you hadn't noticed, there's not an electric guitar player set up right here. Does everybody understand with electric guitar? These quadrants really, I think, are so helpful. They've been really helpful for me just in thinking about my playing, especially when we go back to our sonic space and our roles and jobs for instruments. If your piano player, if the song has just piano playing chords right in the middle of that space, then you want your electric guitar playing something single note melodic. You want him up high. You want something that stands out. If your piano player is taking, let's say keys. Keys is just playing a nice organ sound, a heavy organ sound. Well, that kind of lets the guitar player have sort of free reign. Never give a guitar player free reign, but they can sort of bounce around these different quadrants, right? Make sense? Bored? Ready to move on? Okay. Questions about electric guitars?
So it's interesting kind of what you're saying when you're like, you know, on each one of these, you're like, hey, now you know how to boss around, like, you know,
yeah,
whatever. Like using those words, like saying, hey, could you play something a little more like melodic, like something with like more chord, something with just more single notes, like those, totally. That kind of verbiage is helpful for them.
I think absolutely. Okay. I think some electric guitar players will push back just because they don't like being told what to do. But for the most part, like all instrumentalists, yeah. But this translates into language that an electric guitar player can understand. When you just throw out the name of an artist or play it like the recording, that doesn't help, especially if it's like a Hillsong recording. It's like, well, there's 18 electric guitar players like all playing at once, so that doesn't help me. Right. Yeah. Sorry, I don't have $4,000 worth of gear. Okay. Yeah, let's take a short break, and then we're going to try to finish up quick. Let's take like 10 minutes, and then really we're going to blow through the rest of this stuff. Cool? Okay. Let's bring it in. Whole bag. I like your style. Okay. So we're going to, in just a second, we're going to get to kind of talking about actual songs, and we'll make that quick. But let's wrap up talking about our players, if you will. So let's talk about piano and keys. What is the distinction between piano and keys?
Piano.
Computers, that's a good way to say it.
Robots.
What's a piano? It's a stringed percussive instrument. Stringed because it has strings, percussive because those strings get hit by things. Right? It's an acoustic instrument. What does that mean?
It's not electric.
It produces sounds completely apart from an electrical or digital connection. It doesn't need internet. All right, so what are keys? What do we mean by keys?
Keyboard.
Anybody? Synthesizers. Oh, keyboard. Keyboards. Synths. Laptops. Let's be real. Skrillex.
You can spell that.
It is.
It's because it's on his iPod, like, all the time.
They're electronic. So, just real quick, when we're talking about our roles here, what is the role, where does our piano fall within our roles?
Kind of sometimes.
Right.
All of them.
Yeah. It's all about context, right? It's all about what we're trying to accomplish in that particular song, the composition of the band, but really it can do all of them. It can just play chords and rhythm and help keep time. There was actually a time at a church service where the bass player was sick, so the keyboard player just put on a nice piano sound and he made it happen. We had drums and guitar and keyboards, and it was actually, he made it work because he just held down the rhythm. They're always playing chords, right? Well, when they're playing rhythm, they're playing chords. You don't just hit the thing unless you're Ben Folds. And then sometimes they go melodic, right? Now, keyboards, other end of the spectrum. Keys are pretty much chordal melodic. Anything from a synth lead riff type part to a nice pad. What do I mean by pad?
Ambient drone,
yes. You hold down a chord and you keep holding it down until it's time to go to the next chord. It might be a string pad, it might be a big like ambient sort of synth sound, but really you're providing padding, you're providing the sort of landing space that the rest of the band can just sort of gently descend upon. Keys are pretty much in this range here. Piano, we're talking about this range here. Does one translate to the other? Yes. And? Yes. No. Yes. Can you be really good at piano and not really good at keys?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Because it's a very different instrument. It's not unlike the distinction between acoustic guitar and electric guitar. One is a chordal rhythmic instrument. One is a melodic chordal instrument that you might deploy pedals and make all kinds of crazy sounds with. That's a lot of the distinction. Understanding that, so listen to any Hillsong recording and you have some piano, and then you have like 50 keys players all playing. One's playing an organ sound, one's playing a real ambient pad. Again, that's just that background. A lot of people don't like playing keys because it can feel unexciting, because you hold a chord and then you change to another chord. I think it's awesome because you are, if the bass is the floor, keys is the carpet and the throw rugs and the other things that you don't necessarily notice, but when they're not there, the floor seems bare. Keys can really provide that sort of extra accoutrement. the accoutrements. Cool. So, what are some of the pitfalls with piano? Try to be the band? Yeah. At New Life Church, it's a big church where they taught me all this stuff. For better or for worse, they're like the Hillsong Colorado. They have what they call the four-finger rule for piano players. And literally, you're only allowed four fingers on the keys at a time. You get one bass, you don't get split octave basses because you've got other stuff down low, and you get a three-note chord. Now, you get to come up with fun inversions for all those, but they have a four-finger rule generally. Works out pretty well. Now, if it's just acoustic and piano, that rules out the window. Go to town. But again, yeah, the piano, the biggest pitfall is, yeah, I can cover the entire spectrum of sound, therefore I should. And that's not true. Pitfall with keys, I would say one right now. Keys are one of those things you don't necessarily notice when it's good, but you do notice when it's wrong. When an organ sound is just hitting every chord change and hitting all the right notes, it just blends in. It's beautiful. When an organ hits a sour note or a wrong note, it sticks out like a sore thumb. So that can be one of the pitfalls. There's just a lot more stuff involved. A keyboard and maybe a synthesizer and maybe a laptop running stuff. Really solid key players are almost like unicorns, because it's like somebody that is really into getting really cool sounds, and I've got patches running from my laptop, and like I just love creating and holding down an awesome pad. It's really hard to find, but it's one of those things that it's like when you don't have it, you're kind of like, well, I never noticed it. But then when you have a good keys player, all of a sudden you're like, I could never go back to not having that keyboard player. And I think when you have piano and keys working in conjunction, sometimes it's the same person. It's not uncommon to have somebody playing the low notes. They're just playing a pad, and then they're playing the chords with their right hand. Kind of the double threat. So, yeah, piano, keys, feel good? Questions, comments, concerns?
I think just knowing the synths that you're using.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want like a Mario sound coming out of it as well with a phone.
Totally, so, totally. That's another huge pitfall of synths. If the pitfall of piano is, I can cover the entire spectrum, therefore I should, the pitfall with keys can be, I can produce this really cool sound, therefore I should, all the time. And yeah, you don't want a cool Skrillex, you don't want dubstep synths. Before the throne of...
Why is your synth... Okay.
What's that?
Any other glaring pitfalls?
Do you have one in mind? Okay. Those are ones for me. I think, keys just... It's hard. It's something that you have to work at. Piano, you have to... I mean, a good piano player is very different than a bad piano player. But you can put a good piano player in front of any piano, and they can make it happen. You take a good keys player out of their equipment, and then it's not necessarily the same thing. So, and I think we're actually going to get a decent synth to accompany the Nord, so that we'll actually be able to have some good. I think. Did I just? Now we've said it. Dad said we're getting it, so now we have to get it.
No, you just ruined Christmas.
Yeah, surprise everybody.
I think it's also like a really important instrument, just because I think it carries so well. I mean, like the piano, because it's acoustic, we mic it, carries mm-hmm. really well.
Yes,
it carries a lot of the song. I think a lot of times when it gets mixed and stuff like that. So
yes.
it's just a really beautiful instrument. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that we have a piano and we have people who can play it well.
Yeah, and you really need your drums and bass have to really sync up. Then next, your piano and keys really need to be communicating. Your piano player and your bassist really need to communicate a lot as well. And then your electric guitar player and your keys player need to also communicate. It might sound cool on paper to have a synth and an electric guitar do the same line at the same time, and that might work in a recording studio sometimes. Live, all you're going to hear is just mush. You're going to hear just notes, random arbitrary notes from some sort of instrument. So,
especially in the sanctuary.
Especially in the giant echo dome. Cool. Let's real quick, the echo dome. Let's talk about strings, right? Strings are kind of a wild card because we don't have them every single Sunday, which is sometimes a shame. We don't always have strings. Where are strings on our spectrum?
High.
Yeah, they're like up here, right? Mid to high.
Less than cello.
Ooh.
I don't know where y'all get cello.
Yeah. So let's talk about violins, because we've got multiple violin players, right? They're playing up here. Another one where the electric guitar player really needs to pay attention to the violin. When I played a couple weeks ago, we had a violin, and Tower and I talked every single song, what are you going to do? And sometimes he played a lot more low notes, or just he would just drone the root note, and that was it. And then I would play a more single note melodic thing. And sometimes I would just kind of play or sort of pick through the chords, and he would play nice melodic pieces. It's really important, I think, to communicate about that. Violin is another one, though, where you don't have the advantage of sort of folk violin knowledge, usually. Like, if you learn the violin, you learn the violin correctly. You learn how to read music and how to play generally classical stuff, unless you play fiddle. Even then, you learn lots of scales and things like that. So if you're not a violin player, it's important to kind of help your violinist, like, hey, it's okay to just, like, I almost say let the violinist off the leash, as it were. Let them play melodic parts. Tell your electric guitar players, back off, fill up a little lower, and let the violins do some running. But that said, if you're playing violin, it is important to communicate a lot with electric guitar, and still the piano a little bit. Make sure you're just not clashing with each other, because if your L guitar is here and your piano's there, and they're all trying to carve out the same space, then our mid-highs are suddenly just garbage. They're just mud. Any questions? We have three violinists that I know of, four that I know of at our church, I think. So it doesn't happen nearly enough.
From like a sound angle, like, I feel like violin often appears as kind of a novelty, and it's exciting, and I have heard many times that when there's a violin player, you will hear so much violin in the mix. It's like so loud, and there's lots of other stuff going on that
yeah.
doesn't get heard, because the violin is beautiful. It is less common.
Yeah.
So it like has like a shadow to be, or it has
yeah.
tendency to overshadow other instruments in the mix, and that's more of a note to sound
people. And that can be really a thing with sound stuff. And in hindsight, we should have gone into that more of how to communicate with a sound person. when a violin's playing, you want your sound, you want whoever is running sound to pull out kind of the like lower frequencies on the violin, because all the instruments are producing pretty much all the frequencies, just in different quantities, and so that can get subtly muddy. And so you can actually have whoever's mixing sort of carve out space for your instruments. Hey, on the violin, turn down their lows. Give them a little more high. Give it a little more air and breadth. On the electric guitars, pull out the lows. Give it a lot more mid-range and cut some of the highs. And that's something that we can talk about at another time. But yeah, that is a huge thing, because a lot of times it's like, we've got violin and I didn't hear it at all. Or there was violin and I heard nothing but it. And that's always on the sound person. Actually, that's always on the worship leader. Because you're on the band leader, excuse me, because it's your job as a band leader to facilitate what we're doing. Vocals. What are the vocals?
The most important.
And that's going to lead us into what we're going to talk about next, the elements of a song. Vocals pretty much occupy a high to low mid space. Vocals are in your mid range. Except when James is singing. Even then, he's low mids. Male vocals are mid to low mids. Female vocals are high mids to high frequencies. So you don't want your female vocalist sounding all boomy. You don't want your male vocalist sounding boomy either, but if you have to pick. Cool. So let's talk really briefly about the elements of a song. There are two really major components to any song. And when I say song, I mean the band is about to do this 4-minute musical thing on a Sunday morning. The song has technical elements, and it has thematic elements. These need to be wed together. Designers, you might call this form and function. You can't have one without another. Well, you can, but it's better when you try to have both. So your technical is your what and how. So let's say we are playing Cannons, not Top Gun. So I would say what are some of the technical elements of a song?
Song structure.
Yeah. Keys and signatures, yes. So Cannons is in the key of G, generally, when we play it. What does that mean?
Everybody plays in that key.
Yeah, what's a key?
It's how many flats or sharps in this?
Yeah, keys, a collection of notes that go well together. That's the easiest way I know to put it. In the key of G, you've got notes that go well together and notes that don't. You've got G, A, B, C, D, E, F sharp, and G again. That's the key of G in a nutshell. When you play notes outside of that key, it sounds bad because it clashes with that key. So the key is the grouping of notes and chords that are going to sound good in that song. We also have a time signature, right? Cannons is in 4/4 time. Does anybody know what that means?
Four beats for measure.
Yeah. So you're going to count the song into sections of four beats. It's in 4/4 time. Why does it matter to know that?
You get lost, you can figure out where you are.
So you don't get lost. This determines the rhythm of the song, right? What's a good 3/4 song?
Come behold the wondrous mystery.
Come behold the wondrous mystery. Three. You start over every three beats, right? If somebody's trying to play a fourth beat in there, you've got a serious problem, right? If the piano thinks it's in 4/4, they're gonna play E 4 times instead of 3, and they're gonna all of a sudden throw everything off. So the time signature is a huge important, and your tempo, right? What's your tempo? What's a tempo?
It's 148.
How many beats per minute? Why does it matter how many beats per minute we play it at? What does that determine?
How fast the song
goes. Tempo is your speed. Right. Which, the technical elements are super important only because number two is so important. The thematic elements of a song. I like to think of these as the what for and why. Why does it matter that Come Behold the Wondrous Mystery is at the tempo it's at and in the key it's at? Well, what are we trying to do when we sing Come Behold the Wondrous Mystery? Anybody? What are we inviting the congregation to do? To come behold the wondrous mystery. Christ the Lord upon the tree. Come behold. What happens when we double the tempo of that song?
You don't have a lot of time to behold.
There's no beholding, right? This all falls apart when we mess up the technical elements. Now, what's great is we can sometimes use and abuse our technical elements to change the dynamic of a song. We can play Before the Throne of God at 135 beats per minute in 4/4 time, and it's this super happy Before the Throne of God above. Yeah, rejoice. You can play it in 3/4 time, really slow, and in a minor key, and all of us sing about how desperately lost we would have been without our Savior, right? So this is so important, and it's each one just feeds into the other. So we want to always use our technical elements for the sake of our thematic elements. That is, we use our what and our how for the what, for, and the why. If we want people to come behold the wondrous mystery, then we need to do something musically that invites and encourages people to come behold the wondrous mystery. We don't want to encourage people to come behold how many times a drummer can hit the drums in a measure, or
how quickly a piano player can move through all of their scales or how loud an electric guitar player can be. The answer is really. We want people to come behold Jesus. We want people to see and savor the goodness of our God. And we want to we want to be invisibly good at what we do. We want people to, when people hear a song that we're playing, we don't want them to hear the song. We want them to hear the Holy Spirit calling them to what that song is calling them to. So when we sing How Deep the Father's Love for Us, we don't want people to leave thinking about how cool the guitar was or how great that vocalist was. We want people to think about how deep the Father's love for us is, how vast beyond all measure. So we use our technical elements. We use them to drive home these thematic elements. Good Friday is one of my favorite services every year, because we get to sort of turn a lot of our songs on their head. We get to deconstruct the technical side to do a completely different thematic thing. So we get to take a song like Come Ye Sinners, which is usually sort of mid-tempo, very invitational, very welcoming, very major key, and we get to put it in a minor key. We get to slow it way down, and all of a sudden it is this broken, dark, brooding, Come Ye Sinners, because all of us are, and look what sin hath wroth, Christ on the tree. This matters, and every member of the band, vocals, drums, sound person, that's the imaginary sound booth up there, should be heavily invested in these. Especially this. This is so key. When we're singing Come Behold the Wondrous Mystery, do we want really upfront electric guitars and solos? No. We do want probably a lot of piano with those nice reflective chords, and we want vocals that are inviting people to come behold the wondrous mystery. So every element, again, like Zach Lind says, when he plays a Jimmy Eat World song, all he thinks about is what is the lead singer singing about, and how can he make his drums sound like that idea. So when you're playing strings or you're playing keys, the question to ask isn't what should I play, it's how can I make my instrument sound like what we're singing about. How can my instrument sound like what I'm saying God is like in this song? If we're singing about the depth of my sin and my depravity, then that should have an impact on what and how I play. And if we're singing about the depth and depravity of sin, hopefully your desire to be really out front and distracting and show off, the Holy Spirit will use your lack of focus on this to reveal your own sin and depravity. If you don't think you're a depraved sinner, just play a drum solo during a song about your depravity. That's my thoughts about that. Anything anybody wants to contribute to this part? Any questions? Or when we talk about the technical and thematic elements, anything stand out? Anything like stick in your brain? Like, ooh, this. Does that make sense? Why we think about this? Does it make sense why it matters?
Yeah.
And it matters a lot. It matters a lot, right? Especially when we're going to, on a Sunday, have the, in many ways, audacity to stand up before people and say, "Follow me to Christ." When oftentimes what we're saying is, follow me to me, come behold my wondrous mystery of how does Sean play those cool sounds. Ultimately we want these elements to line up in such a way that people are looking at us, they're looking away from us by looking at us. They're looking at us and not seeing us. Joel. Yeah.
And so that's really helpful to be aware of. I think sometimes you don't even pay attention to what the time signature is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you just, by default, feel, yeah. And so I think very clearly identifying what songs are really helps you. It sounds silly, but like even like on a 3-4 song or a 6-8 song,
Like
sometimes you want to count in 3-4 versus 3 or 6, you know?
Yeah.
Like those things, the whole band being on the same page, versus like
And I think these two questions here, what for and why, everybody should be asking that of themselves, but also asking that of the band leader. If you're playing on a Sunday and the band leader says, well, I kind of want to do this song like this, or I kind of want to do it like the recording, a really good question is to ask is, okay, why? Do you think that merely sounds good, or are you thinking, hey, this is a song about the deep love of the Father displayed through the sacrifice of the Son, and I think that the way we do this song on the recording really conveys that, and if that's, does that make sense? Like, we should always be asking these questions, what and why? To me, nothing is worse than when somebody just shows up. You can see it in a bar show, you can see it on a Sunday morning when a drummer has just shown up, when a vocalist has just shown up, or is winging it. That would be my third rule forever, is never wing it. What do I mean by wing it? Come unprepared. Never show up and go, I'll just figure it out when I get there. Even if all you do is in the car, listen through the songs and think about, what am I going to play on this? What would contribute well? Where's the, if I'm an electric guitar player, what's the piano doing and how should I think about that? Never just wing it. And also, I would say with winging it and all of this stuff, this is a bit tangential, but I think it's important. Come up with a part. Have a plan. So if you're going to play X on the verse and Y on the chorus, then you need to play X on the verse and Y on the chorus. What you don't do is, when the verse comes up, then start figuring out what you're going to play. And on the chorus, then you start figuring out what you're going to play. Does that make sense? It's really good for consistency, too, especially for this. Because you might, a lot of times a drummer just nails it. Man, God, I looked at you. It was just perfect. It was the exact right feel. We were feeling what we were meant to feel when the song was written. And then we get up on when it's time to play, and it's something completely different, and this gets lost because somebody's just winging it. Technical, thematic, super important. Any questions?
Okay.
Yeah.
You kind of talked about, like, come in with your plan, you're going to play it,
yeah.
You know what you're going to play. Mm-hmm. Like, I get what you're saying.
Totally.
Sometimes that kind of feels like it's taking the fun out of the band aspect.
Totally. So let's have rule number one, have a plan. Rule number two, be ready to destroy said plan. Be ready to destroy it. Let's say kill it. Be ready to kill it. Be ready to kill your plan. Because sometimes, you know what, on a Sunday we go, let's play the Fourth Rune of God. Up-tempo, boom, everybody's got it, we're going to play the fast version. And something didn't sit right, and the drummer suddenly goes, hey, what if we played the 3-4 more contemplative, folky version? And then you practice that, and it's like, that's perfect. So always have a plan. And always recognize that, like, your identity and the source of your standing with God is not determined on how well you stick to your plan or how well you execute any of these things. So all your plans are disposable. All of us are disposable. Yeah, because it's kind of both and, right? You should always have a plan. And you should always be ready at the drop of the hat to get rid of that plan because the band leader says, could you just play something really light and airy and sparse? And you go, well, I had this super cool technical riff, but you know what? Let's go with that. So. Yeah. Yeah.
I think also just when a band is prepared, you can just tell it's a lot easier to rehearse.
Yeah.
It's just like somebody kind of being wishy-washy.
Yeah. Because what can happen a lot is we talk about, I don't want the congregation focused on me, but then you're playing and you're super focused on you because you didn't have a good plan. And so you're kind of like, you're sort of just keeping the thing afloat. You're building the airplane in the air. And so you're just trying to keep parts from falling off versus like, okay, I can relax and I can actually myself come behold the wondrous mystery because I'm not super worried. That said, this will be the last thing I say. I have learned from playing in worship teams and leading worship for 14 years. There is a fine line between the amount to which Sunday is your own worship experience time versus you foregoing that a little bit for the sake of the congregation. Because what can happen a lot of times is I'm having this amazing personal worship experience that I don't want to stop, and then I miss the end of the song, and I totally like kept playing and the rest of the band stopped, and I've just like distracted the rest of the congregation. So there's this, admittedly, it's a fine line. We never want to be so caught up in our own personal experience that we miss out on the fact that God has brought us to worship together with brothers and sisters. We also don't want to be so focused on just that awesome thing that we like don't pay any attention at all to what we're doing, etc. Does that make sense? Cool.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So for electric guitar, you come with a plan.
Yeah.
Especially for like practicing.
Yeah.
How would you say, so like if a guy like Tower is there and I were playing with him,
yeah,
how would you slowly start to build in to like what my plan is versus what his plan is? Do you have like the drums are the backbone, so you start with drums and then bass and then slowly everybody goes on top of them? Or
yeah, I mean, The fortunate thing is a lot of that's built in, right? We already know how fast the song is. We already know the key signature is sort of determined sort of the feel of the song, right? And how fast it's going to be. So, you know, if the song is slow, contemplative, 3-4, we've already kind of got some ideas, right? We're going to be doing some melodic stuff. We're going to be doing some sort of contemplative, maybe soulful type thing. So that right there, we've got a theme. And then you can talk to each other about, well, where are you going to fit on that? For me, on electric guitar, a lot of times I'm just like playing a single note almost the entire song with just reverb. And all it is just this wash underneath everything. And then the violin can just play nice, beautiful melodies. And then and it's great because all I have to do is play a single note. But I think it's that it's some of that's built into the song, and then some of that just takes communication. I mean, the worst bands are the ones that can't talk to each other, that can't go, hey, what are you playing on the verse there? Okay, you're playing like a melodic piece? Great. I'm going to kind of drop down and play this other piece. Or say, hey, what if on the verses I play more chords, but then on the chorus I'll kind of jump up to this part and you drop down and you go, yeah, and then it's great. Does that make sense? Just communication. And that's the point of all this. We want everybody to be able to talk to everybody. I want you to feel like when you show up on a Sunday, I have a dear friend who's really, really good at bass, but always talks about how he doesn't feel like he's a musician. I want that guy to show up on Sundays and go, yeah, I'm a friggin' bass player. Like, I know what I'm doing, and I'm not just a hobbyist or a fill-in guy. Like, this is my jam, and I'm just jamming for the Lamb.
And
all right, that's it.